It's 14 minutes away from 9. You are with Nick Reinberg at 97.3 ABC Illawarra. Now, your eyes glaze over when you hear about some of the costings about nuclear power. Now, this is a really significant thing for Australia. And you have to think about this when it comes to your vote this weekend. As you no doubt know by now, the Liberal National Coalition have suggested that we need to build several nuclear power plants in Australia. And it's the only way we're going to get a low carbon future and lower our prices of our electricity. The costs from the coalition using frontier economics come in at $331 billion. That's a pretty big figure. The Labor Party say, no, it's nearly double that. Their own modelling says it costs about $600 billion. Now, a completely different modelling from an organisation independent of both of the parties, from Climate Energy Finance, says that will cost at least $4.3 trillion. Now, Tim Buckley is the Director of Climate Energy Finance, and he joins me now here at ABC Illawarra to explain more. Tim Buckley, hello.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks very much for having me on.
First of all, since we're talking politics, can you just explain who Climate Energy Finance are and where you get your funding from?
Nick, really good starting point. Climate Energy Finance is a small Australian public interest think tank, 100% funded by philanthropy. So we have no government funding, no corporate funding, no financial funding. And I vote teal. So I, as you mentioned, I'm neither in the ALP nor the LNP. I want elected members of parliament to accept and act on the climate emergency, on the climate science. That's my agenda.
Mm. And just briefly on your own background, I know you spent a lot of time with, you know, Citigroup and Deutsche Bank and those kind of institutions looking at, particularly at finance for energy, whether it was coal or gas and now renewables, right?
That's correct. For my sins, I was managing director, head of research at Citigroup, at the time the biggest bank in the world, and I have spent 35 years studying financial modelling.
Okay, so there's your bona fides and who Climate Energy Finance are. How did you come to this figure of $4.3 trillion? You say it's implied costs. What is implied?
Nick, the devil is always in the detail. And exactly as you said in your introduction, the LNP is claiming one number, the ALP is claiming another number. You've really got to look at the agenda behind it. What I have done is just pointed out that a good financial modeller can come up with any solution, any answer that they want if they make the appropriate assumptions. And so there's a technical term called garbage in, garbage out. Mm. If you put garbage assumptions in, you can get any answer you want. What I have been highlighting is that the LNP, or more importantly, the frontier economics modelling done for the Liberal National Party, clearly had an objective to say that nuclear was cheaper than alternative sources. Now, I fundamentally disagree with that. In the Australian context, I think nuclear will be the most expensive solution for Australia's energy needs in the next couple of decades, and that's what counts. What happens in 30, 40, 50 years certainly won't be Peter Dutton or Anthony Albanese's problem. What they've done is compared apples and oranges. And so my number of $4.3 trillion quantifies in large part the economic modelling difference between the two scenarios. So the frontier economics modelling assumes that the Australian economy is going to shrink by 8% by 2050 relative to the scenario they model for the ALP. 8% difference is $300 billion a year of lost GDP. And one of the key things I've learned about energy over the decades is that the more economic activity you have, the more energy you need to power it. If you assume the economy is 8% smaller, you need a lot less energy, no matter whether it's nuclear, renewables, or fossil fuel-based. And that's the fundamental difference.
Now, you say there's a big difference between the way we make this transition. There's a big difference between step change and progressive change. In fact, you say it's so large that it swamps all other costs. Can you explain that one?
Correct. You've nailed it. There are a whole lot of assumptions in there, but the really big one, which I mentioned, $300 billion of lost GDP by 2050, add that up over the next 25 years, it adds up to $3.5 trillion. So it swamps every other number.
So why is there lost GDP? Why, when we'd be spending a lot of money on these nuclear plants, creating a lot of jobs, for instance, why is there lost GDP?
Yeah, and this is not my modelling assumption. This is actually by the Australian Energy Market Operator. They come up, as you articulated, the step change versus the progressive change. Frontier Economics took those two scenarios, modelled them, and then came up with a cost to, supposedly a cost to consumers or cost to Australia. And it's comparing apples and oranges. The assumption under this progressive change is that the economy is going to keep shrinking relative to where we could be going, because we're going to continue along the deindustrialization of our economy that we've seen for the last 30, 40 years. The progressive closing down and offshoring of a lot of our manufacturing capacity, and the progressive change assumes that continues. And it's borne home by the comments in February of this year by the CEO of Rio Tinto Aluminium globally, so one of the biggest aluminium companies in the world, and he said, we have two choices. We either keep going with our high cost, high emissions energy supply for our Australian aluminium refineries, and we shut them down in the next 5 to 10 years, or we decarbonize and we pivot to low cost firm renewables to power our aluminium smelters, and then we keep going for decades. That was the statement of one of the biggest aluminium refineries in the world. What the progressive change assumes is that all of those aluminium smelters with all of the jobs disappear.
Right. I have another book in front of me here, which is Ross Garnaut's Superpower. And you quote from that in your report. Essentially, if I can sum up some of the chapters of Ross Garnaut's, he says there's a huge opportunity if we manufacture stuff in a low-carbon way, whether it's steel or aluminium, because that is going to be hugely in demand around the world. And you're suggesting if we are nuclear-powered that we've lost that opportunity, and therefore, for instance, $100 billion in lost green export revenue from Australia's aluminium industry alone. So how much lost opportunity is there, in your view, if we go to the nuclear power option?
We will almost invariably lose the entire aluminium refining sector, which is 7,500 direct jobs, 13,500 indirect jobs across Australia. And so you made the comment we could power those refineries with nuclear. It's not done anywhere in the world, almost anywhere in the world. Normally, aluminium is done with hydroelectricity, for example, in Canada, which means it's low cost, it's got baseload power, dare I use that phrase, and it's got zero emissions power supply. But at the end of the day, refineries need a lot of power and they need to operate 90%+ of the time. Rio Tinto has said, unless we can firm up renewables and deliver low cost, zero emissions energy for our refineries in Australia, we'll close them, because Rio Tinto, one of the biggest aluminium companies in the world, says the world is going to demand low-cost, low-emissions aluminium. And if you can't supply both of those two things in the next decade, you close it down. If Rio has to wait for 20 years for the nuclear power plants to be built, the refinery's major contract, like Tomago in Newcastle, its contract for electricity supply expires in 2028. They're not going to sit there and park the facility for 15 years while they wait for Dutton's nuclear power plant to be commissioned. The workers can't sit around for 15 years twiddling their thumbs. So Rio Tinto said we either pivot, we do what Ross Garnaut is saying, we embrace the massive employment opportunities for Australia by decarbonising, by driving massive investments. You use the word cost. It's often when you invest, you are making an investment. You invest in our future. You invest in our workforce. You invest in our environment, our community. And that's what we're talking about. That's what Ross Garnaut is talking about. I was down your neck of the woods, down at Port Kembla at the steelworks last month. Brilliant to see. They are trying and investing in the future. They're not moving fast enough, but it's amazing the technical and experience of the executives that walked us around the facility. They're doing due diligence on Port Kemp, on Whyalla Steelworks. That is the path to decarbonising the steel industry of Australia and doing what Ross Gunnow said. Pivot, invest and become a world leader, or don't invest, don't pivot and close it down. They're your two options.
What are they, in your view, economically speaking, is the best option being offered by any of the political parties in Australia, whether it's the Greens or the Labor Party or the LNP?
That's a very loaded political question 5 days before.
Well, you've already admitted you vote teal, so you're suggesting everybody vote more teal.
I do, but what I would suggest is everyone make it absolutely clear that they are going to vote for members of parliament of any colour, of any persuasion, that accepts and acts on the climate science. So I find it horrifying that the leader of the opposition said he can't answer the question about the climate science because he's not a scientist. Did he not go through high school? Can he not accept the words of experts? That is just ludicrous. Meanwhile, we've got China investing hundreds of billions of dollars in zero emissions aluminium, in zero emissions solar, in batteries, in electric vehicles. I was just reading about BYD, the biggest electric vehicle company in the world, sales up 50% year on year, investing $8 billion a year in research and development to build the best technology batteries and cars in the world. They're number one in electric vehicle in the world. They didn't exist 20 years ago. That's investing in the future. Australia needs to actually invest in industries of the future, and we need to transition. So my answer is vote for any parliamentarian or candidate that accepts and acts on the climate science and wants to invest in our economic future, not in trying to hold up the industry of the past, the fossil fuel industry. We've got a couple of decades to decarbonise, a couple of decades to pivot, and we need to use those couple of decades really decisively to make sure that we don't throw out the old before we've built the new, and to make sure we transition successfully rather than just deny, 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 and then end up closing existing manufacturing down and having nothing to replace it.
All right, Tim Buckley, thanks very much.
Brilliant, thanks, Nick.
Tim Buckley, analyst from Clean Energy Finance, Climate Energy Finance here at 97.3 ABC, Illawarra.